I am a zombie takeout on the wind. Watch how I soar. What's up? Welcome to episode 158 of Zombie
Takeout,
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we have some listeners submitted. This first one is from Roberto Suarez on my post on Google Plus about last week's episode. He said, "Say it ain't so. Is this some kind of sick April Fool's joke? What will I do without my weekly dose of ZT?" And then he later said, "You bastards, you totally got me." So he said the thing about it being a sick April Fool's joke without knowing it was an April Fool's joke.
By the way, this is the first Zombie Takeout reunion.
Mm-hmm. We got the band back together.
Retirement went by so quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a very short retirement. Yeah. Elf rose over pretty quickly.
Oh, well.
And I'm ashamed that I made that reference.
Now, the question is, are you Henley or Fry?
I have no idea. Anyway, when I asked Roberto about, you know, the sick April Fool's joke line, and more to the point, the fact that he said that without having gotten to the end of the episode, he said that he'd heard most of it, then he had to go to a meeting. He spent the whole meeting not paying attention and thinking of a tribute to us to do on Trailer Clash. And then said, thank goodness he finished listening before he made a fool of himself. So if we had actually retired, they were going to give us a tribute episode.
No shit, man. Now I wish you kind of retired. Oh, well.
This next one is from Matt Goranson on Facebook on the trailer for last week's movie. He said, ukulele, you guys really had me going.
That's a funny expression.
If you haven't listened to the end of last week's episode, and well, if you haven't, you're probably very confused right now. Go back and listen to the last few minutes.
Really?
That will all make sense.
You should always listen to the very end of Zombie Takeout if you have not figured that out by now.
If you haven't been listening to the entire recording, last week aside, the April Fool's Day gag, I always throw an outtake at the end after the closing theme. So,
yeah.
If you haven't been listening to that, you're missing something.
Yeah. Sometimes it's meh. Sometimes it's hilarious.
Yeah, I gotta take what I've got, you know.
Right. We're not fake, you know, making flubs. They are real flubs.
And I also just wanted to say, Matt, thank you for using the secret word. I also said this on Facebook. He was the only one.
Yeah.
And this last one comes from Tom Gerke on a tweet that I sent out this morning, just saying that I'm watching Serenity for this week's episode while wearing my Blue Sun t-shirt, which I'm still wearing because I'm that much of a fanboy.
Oh, boy.
He said, I loved that movie. It works for me on multiple levels. That said, it's kind of bittersweet.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll get into that later. I completely agree. And I should say that that movie is from 2005, Serenity. And I just want to mention, before we get into the summary, we're going to have to get into some spoilers this time. I know we always do, and we never warn you, but there are a couple of key points in the story that are really surprising and really poignant that we really can't avoid talking about.
And we used to be fantastic at keeping spoilers away. I think we've kind of
gotten lazy.
Slipped recently.
Yeah. If you haven't seen both the series and the movie, and if you haven't and you like science fiction, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Sometimes, you know, you just don't have Netflix.
But if you haven't, go find them. They're on Netflix if you're in the U.S. and have a Netflix account. Otherwise, there are other places you can find them. Go watch the movie and the series and then come back. We'll wait.
That's the magic of podcasting, isn't it?
Or more to the point, you can just jump in here and continue listening once you've seen it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by Fruity Odie Bars. Make a man out of a mouse or a virtually unstoppable killing machine out of a teenage girl with Fruity Odie Bars.
And also brought to you by False Endings. They're not just for podcasts anymore.
And by the Blue Sun Corporation. What don't they do? Or, for that matter, what do they do?
Okay, so we have our... continues. I don't know how much of the TV show should I mention in the plot summary, or if I should just take this?
I'm probably going to talk about it quite a bit, because, as I said, huge fanboy.
Well, you know what? I'll just take this plot summary, the movie as is.
Okay.
We have the crew of the Firefly, or of Serenity, I should say, the Firefly-class ship Serenity. And, well, they're not to full strength. They're missing a few people. And I'm trying to think now because it's now been a few days since I've seen it.
Missing two, specifically.
Yeah, they're missing two. And it's the usual thing from the TV show where they are being chased by government spooks because they are harboring a child who has obviously been messed with. And the more you see, the more you realize they are trying to turn her into a killing machine of sorts.
Well, to clarify, you say child. In the story, she's a teenager. In fact, she was, 24 in the movie, 20 when they shot the series. So just so I don't sound horrible later on, in case I say a few things.
Well, she's supposed to be 17 in the show, right?
Yes.
And of course, if you watch the series, they pretty much showed her ass at the opening of every episode.
Yeah.
Just did the credits, you know? So anyway, her brother is aboard the ship and has been taking care of her after breaking her out of said institution. And she has this, there's a specialist, an operative from the government who is he doesn't question anything that's given to him, and he is ready to get her back at all costs for his government. And you could almost say hilarity ensues at this point, couldn't you? But there's so much more that goes on here.
Yeah.
He chases them across the galaxy. He's such a badass that they have to really be cutting to get around him, and there's so many impossible situations where it seems like they won't get out of, but they come up with I'm trying to see how much to give away and how much not to.
Creative ways to get away from him and get out of danger. Also,
right.
Early in the film, River, the girl, has a, how shall we put it, a hallucination, has a moment where she says the name Miranda.
Right.
And the other plot of the movie is them trying to figure out what Miranda is.
Right, it's the ghost world kind of thing that they have to go to discover the mystery, and they have to, of course, get past the crazy people, of course.
The Ram Reavers.
The fine young cannibals.
Hmm.
Then, of course, they have to get past their operative who's still tracking them down.
Hmm. I think hilarity ensues works there.
I think hilarity ensues works too, yeah. I think that's the gist of the plot there.
So, actually, I watched two movies to prepare for this episode.
Oh, really?
Before Serenity. And also a documentary called Done the Impossible, which I highly recommend, about how it went from a failed TV series that only ran 14 episodes, for those who may not know, to a movie. And I also watched the series finale just for fun, because I needed to see more.
Yeah. I'd watched the entire series right before watching the movie. You know, it was my first time outdoing the series. So it was cool to just see them all in one shot.
And I should say, I've been hyping the series to you for years now.
Yeah.
Worth it?
And the series did live up to it, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it definitely did.
And actually, this is actually my first time watching the movie without marathoning the series first.
Oh.
I marathon the whole thing at least like twice a year.
Now, there's some weird elements to the series that we talked about a little last week off air. Because, we weren't actually really finishing up. We planned to do this week.
I should clarify. At the end of last week's episode, for those who did hear it, why didn't you post the secret word? But the words... The word Serenity sounded maybe a bit plugged in. That's because we were planning on doing a different movie this week, and while I was editing, decided to do Serenity.
Yeah.
So the guaranteed to be on the recommendations list unless, you know, one of us has been taken over by aliens and the love fest and all of that. We meant that about that movie, but I think it applies here as well.
I think so too, yeah. I can't see.
No.
I would be shocked if you didn't rate this.
Oh, of course. Please.
So yeah, the weird element about it, and it's not that it's a Western in space, because, you know, one of the things I had just rewatched last night, actually, was what I think we don't think of as a Western in space, but really it was Deep Space Nine.
Interesting.
In fact, even Bashir at the very beginning, when he first steps onto the space station, is talking about practicing frontier medicine.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
The bar was a big factor, like the saloon in every Western.
Saloon, right, yeah.
Hmm.
And, you know, you got the sheriff and the deputy. Yeah.
Interesting. So anyway, the Western thing's kind of, you know, this isn't the first space Western.
In fact, the original Star Trek, Roddenberry's way of describing it...
Wagon train to the stars.
A wagon train to the stars, yes.
And Joss, when he was pitching this, said it was a stagecoach in space.
Yeah. So really the weird element, I think, though, is the Confederate angle. I still can't quite wrap my head around that.
We talked about this before. You kind of analogized it to the Civil War.
Yes.
Before we get any further, we really should explain the backstory of this universe. It takes place 500 years in the future, 2517 to be exact. And at this point, most of the Earth's population, if not all of them, have left what they call Earth that was because it couldn't support the numbers anymore and migrated to another star system. At the time, the two major superpowers were the U.S. and China, and they've kind of merged into this alliance, as they call it.
And so, of course, the nice device they used on the show to avoid any profanity was everybody cursed in Chinese.
Hence the title of this week's episode. And one of the more confusing elements of the series, it takes you a while to kind of key into that.
It did take like an episode or two to figure out. Like, wait, oh, yeah.
Now, initially, the alliance left the border planets, you know, the planets that were kind of on the outskirts of the system alone and let them run themselves. And then they decided they were going to, you know, tighten their grip a bit. This led to a war that Mal, the captain of Serenity, and Zoe, his first officer, fought in. Of course, their side lost.
Known primarily for the color of their coats.
Brown coats. Also the name of the fan base.
Yeah.
So that's the universe that takes place, and hence the Civil War analogy that you were talking about last time.
Right, and of course, you could say Star Wars the same thing, but it's different. You know, Star Wars...
Of course, this was heavily influenced by Star Wars.
Star Wars is sort of like, is a liberal, you know, telling of the story. You know, they're fighting the government to change the government, you know, to bring peace, whereas these guys are fighting the government to be left alone from the government and live life on their own.
You said it was kind of an analogy to the Civil War. I see it more as just kind of a libertarian treatise.
That you could say that too. You could, yeah. Because the show, obviously they make a statement about slavery being used throughout the galaxy to try to, you know, distance themselves, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
From our, you know, struggle for states' rights to own people.
So, yeah, I just see it as more of a statement about libertarianism than a specific analogy to the Civil War. And it's really, obviously, a Star Wars nod.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Empire versus the Rebels. It's just that there weren't as many Rebels in Firefly. Just kind of this one ship.
Well, that's also the thing, you know, it's more of an individuality thing.
Right, it's all about the individual and freedom, and
right,
to do whatever you want, within reason. Speaking of Star Wars, I'm going to make a statement that is very controversial. Some may see it as blasphemy. Mal Reynolds is a better Han Solo than Han Solo.
No, come on.
Oh, I think so. This is what the character should be. He never becomes the nice guy. He never, joins the cause. He's always out for he even though he does some very noble things and he's a good guy in the context of the series, he's always out for himself.
You're talking about though character-wise and not performance-wise.
Yes, yeah. That's why I said Mal Reynolds, not Nathan Fillion. Performance-wise, I think it's the draw. Maybe Ford had an edge.
Oh, although Ford was pretty much playing Bobby Fett.
Yeah, and admittedly, as far as the writing, Ford didn't have nearly as much to work with. So
exactly. Yes.
So he had the harder job. So okay, maybe he had the better performance. But I was talking about the characters.
Okay, I see what you mean there.
Obviously, Mal was influenced and inspired by Han Solo. And I think
it's frozen in carbonite.
I think Joss refined the character.
Yeah, okay. That I agree with.
He improved on and refined the character. Yeah, there would be no Mal Reynolds without Han Solo, of course.
As we talked about the whole, Solo shooting Greedo thing, there was a reason, that he needed to. That Lucas, I don't know.
And Mal throws someone into an engine early on in the series.
Yeah. Wow, he deserved it.
But point being, that establishes that he is willing to kill people.
Yeah.
He's not a nice guy. Now, going back to the beginning of the movie, it sets up, the backstory that I explained a minute ago. About Earth that was and the terraforming and all that.
Yeah.
And it does a great perspective jump. First, it starts off as this voiceover narration. And then you see that the voiceover is being done by a teacher in a classroom. And then it becomes a memory of Rivers, which was a great jump scare. Because you see River as a little girl in the classroom, and then suddenly you realize it's her memory when they jab a needle into her head, years later as a 17-year-old right. girl in this institution. And then finally you see that it's a video being watched by the operative and the doctors who let her get away.
Right, the operative is going over exactly what was done with her.
Mm-hmm. How they screwed up.
Yeah.
But I just love how it changes perspective there like four times in about 5 minutes. Now, there were a couple of things that were very different from the series.
Yeah, definitely.
I think most of it is because it's a movie, not a series. The aspect ratio is different, which gives it a very different look.
Right.
The colors are a lot more saturated. And lighting's a bit more dramatic, and it has an orchestral score instead of the Celtic folk score of the series.
It was a lot less Western
yeah.
than the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like Deep Space Nine than the TV show, which was more like the Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yeah, it's a bit more traditional movie. I think a lot of that is the score.
Yeah,
because the score on Firefly is almost a character.
True.
It's that integral a part of the show and the feel of the whole thing.
But so there's the whole, they're eating, a meal together on the mismatched, dinette set kind of thing in the ship, kind of just they're, having chow. But there wasn't really anything like that in the movie,
That's true. You don't have those moments. I mean, they hint at those moments, but
you would think that they would have, less time in the episode to do that, but that yet they did. They did it more in an episode than they did in the movie. It was more future than Western.
Well, yeah. Because on the face of it, it is science fiction.
Yeah.
And I think they were maybe a bit concerned about people being confused by that combination.
But that was the beauty of the show.
True.
True. I mean, the image of the wild horses running with the ship flying over it.
Yeah.
Is the trademark.
Yeah, there was a bar fight in one episode, a classic Old West bar fight.
Right.
There are horses regularly. You see people riding them in the show with guns.
Almost like a Star Wars movie without a lightsaber fight or something, I mean, it's pretty.
Also notable, all of the guns fire actual bullets. They weren't laser guns.
There was an episode with a laser gun.
Well, the Alliance has lasers, I'm guessing. But
it was actually.
Or is that the one that was being stolen?
It was the, yeah, I think it was Stolen. Well, okay. No. Yeah, there was the one that was Stolen, and then there was the episode with the prostitutes.
Oh, right, right, yes.
Where they pretty much did Unforgiven in yeah. space.
That is one of two weaker episodes, in my opinion. That and The Train Job, which was the pilot episode as it aired. The series aired out of order. So the second episode of the series was actually the first.
Yeah.
And then the actual pilot aired somewhere in the middle. Which I think had something to do with the fact that it only lasted 11 episodes.
The moral of the story is Fox fucked up.
Yeah. Fox didn't fuck up, in my opinion. I think Fox was actively trying to sabotage it, but...
Well, that's the fucking up.
Yeah.
They did an NBC.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the movie takes place 6 months after the end of the series.
Right.
And there are three, I think, comic books in the middle. It's a series called Those Left Behind that kind of bridges that gap. Now, we talked about, you know, the science fiction and Western angles.
Right.
I think there's another genre that they've incorporated. The operative was basically a samurai.
Hmm.
Very much about honor and duty and, you know, doing what he had to do. He
You're
uses
right.
a sword.
The sword, right.
And that's his primary weapon. I don't think he ever actually fires a gun.
No, I don't think so either.
But he is very much the evil samurai, not the, you know, not like a Zatoichi who, you know, we sympathize with.
Right.
He's the one trying to kill them.
Well, a lot of Westerns are just takes.
They'll takes on the samurai movie. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Another thing that is distinctive about the series that they did, thankfully, didn't get rid of. I love the language.
Oh, right.
Not just the Chinese profanity. There are certain made-up words. Actually, there's only one made-up word that I can think of, Goram.
I was going to say spadoinkle.
they use Goram in place of goddamn. In fact, I frequently, well, when I'm, you know, when I'm with someone who will get the reference, we'll say Goram Reavers when I'm annoyed by something. But just the language itself, it's Western, but in a very unique way. Now, of course, it's not a perfect movie. There were some flaws. Or actually, I won't even say flaws. I will say things that I would have preferred to be done differently. River and Simon's escape from the institution at the beginning, I would like to have seen them track that a bit more. We only got a couple of shots of it. I would have liked to have seen them follow them a little more closely.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Get a bit more of that. There was a great shot of River holding on to what appeared to be a sprinkler in the ceiling with her legs split on either side. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen that tracked a bit more.
Definitely. If we're getting into flaws, I felt, well, first off, I think the largest flaw in the entire movie, not enough Ron Glass.
Okay. Yeah. We play Shepherd Book, who was off the ship at the beginning.
He's probably, I mean, he's one of my favorite characters in the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
And, I mean, I was like, wow, Ron Glass? And one of the first things I told Sean after we started watching this was...
Why didn't you tell me Ron Glass was in it?
Why did you tell me Ron Glass was in this?
I didn't realize you were such a fan.
You know, any Barney Miller cast ever... It's sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like ignoring if Abe Vigoda were in something, you know? Or the guy that played Dietrich. Whatever happened to that guy?
That's a good question. I honestly can't think of anything else he did.
Yeah. Anyway.
So not but enough yeah, Ron Glass.
Not enough Ron Glass. And the part that was in there of him felt so shoehorned in, you know?
Yeah. Well, basically, he is the old wizard.
Yes.
It's a hero's journey. He's the old wizard. He's the one who has to die to push the hero to do what he has to do.
He's, you know, he's the preacher, though, you know? The old West, they had to have a preacher.
Yeah. And his character was much more interesting and not just the old wizard in the series.
Well, yeah. In the series, he's this man of mystery. I mean, he's the shepherd, as they call the preacher in this time period.
Yeah, it's what they call a priest. Or a monk.
But there were these little weird things that would happen. Like, they needed to get medical attention for someone at a government, you know, outpost. And they're like, well, how are we going to do that? We don't have any money. And he just kind of flips his ID card into the system, and they all turn like, right this way, sir. They roll out the red carpet, and they're like, wait, what? And they never explain. And of course, a movie for this, you expect them to get into to reveal that mystery. Mm-hmm. And for them to just give him pretty much two scenes. Granted, they were good scenes, mm-hmm. but they were damn shoehorned in there.
And I have a feeling they were planning to get into his backstory in the second season or in later seasons.
Of course, yeah.
There is a comic book called A Shepherd's Tale that explains all of that. If you're a fan and you are curious and haven't read it, it's a really interesting story. He really was a shepherd.
Yeah.
He had, you know, taken the vow and been in an abbey for a while. That part was true. Because it's been suggested that before that was released, that he wasn't really a shepherd.
Well, yeah, they make that suggestion in there too, that he's just, you know, posing and uh-huh. not real. In fact, the season finale with the bounty hunter, the weird bounty hunter, the guy that tracked him down.
The
to
one
that
I just watched today, Jubal Early.
Yeah, who pretty much says, "Oh, he's not a shepherd." Creature. Yeah. And then they just leave it. They never explain it. So
again, I think they were setting up for future seasons because that wasn't the last episode they shot. Actually, an episode called The Message was the last episode they shot. And there's a great funeral scene in it that was filmed immediately after the cast had gotten the news that they were canceled.
Oh.
And it really actually lent itself to the scene. Just looking through, the only other real criticism I had, and this is horribly nitpicky, there's a scene early on when they're trying to get away from Reavers where Jane is shot in the leg with a stake attached to a rope by the Reavers. Right. He really didn't bleed. But I don't think there was any blood.
Yeah, there was very little blood.
And he's hanging off the edge of the mule, which was this vehicle they had.
Yeah.
And being, you know, being basically almost ripped in half between the stake and, you know, his hands on the mule. And there's no blood.
That sounds so dirty. Anyway, there was, the other complaint is there was another really big surprise
mm-hmm.
towards the end of the movie that, really hope we don't reveal. Because, I mean, it is really the most surprising thing in this.
Right.
I mean, I kind of knew what was going to happen to the shepherd, thanks to, you know, you telling me to read that article about it.
Well, at that point, you know he's the old wizard.
Yeah. And, you know, but, yeah, it just completely out of left field, though. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the plans, a lot of the ways they were going to get out of things, I kind of could see ahead myself, like how they were going to, you know, get past the operative to, yeah. you know, the Mr. Universe. But there was another surprise in there that it's just out of nowhere and there's hardly anything before it or after it that would suggest that it would happen, you know?
See, I liked that about it.
It does.
And I'll give it away. I won't give a name, but I will say it's a death.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you don't see it coming and particularly that they just keep going.
Yeah.
They don't give you a chance to process it because they don't have time to process it.
It's almost Python-esque. It's almost the equivalent of, you know, the bunny, you know, being catapulted and just squashing the person.
Now, for years, Joss has said that he did that because he needed to show that there were stakes. You know, he needed to ramp up the stakes and show that, you know, not everybody is going to get out of this alive.
How ironic, because isn't that how he... Never mind.
Now, that's been his line for years. However, I was researching and I found out that...
killed with the stake, you get it?
Yeah.
There are stakes.
It wasn't real. Was it a stake? It was a kind of larger first
stake. It was a stake! It's just a pointed stick.
Okay. I found out in my research that actually Ron Glass and the actor who we're referring to in that scene weren't able to sign on for sequels, and everybody else signed on for a 3-picture deal. So that's why he killed them off. So that he didn't have to worry about them being in future movies.
Which is ridiculous, because this movie is 8 years old.
Well, no, but that's at the time. The plan was to do a trilogy.
Yeah.
Referred to as the Big Damn Trilogy, for the Big Damn Heroes line in the series, which was kind of a, you know, catchphrase. But those two actors, Ron Glass and the other one, weren't able to sign on for 3 movies. So Joss's way of handling that was just to kill them, and then you don't have to worry about them in future movies.
He'd almost have been better off not having Ron Glass in the movie at all, you know?
And now you need that hero's journey moment, I think.
Oh, it's kind of tacked in, you know? That was the problem with both of their deaths. It's not surprising that they were contractual reasons that these people were killed, because that's what it looks like.
Just before Book is killed, you find out that between the planet they need to get to and where they are is a sea of Reavers, these cannibalistic monsters.
Right.
Actually humans, but monsters in the metaphorical sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, he needs to do something pretty ballsy to get from here to there. And Book's death is the thing that pushes him over the line to do the insane thing that he would never do under any other circumstances.
He kind of did that stuff all the time in the series, though, without someone killing
But this
him.
Is a different level. You know, damaging the ship and becoming a Reaver, basically masquerading as a Reaver to get through them. A little bit of a different level. Now on to probably my favorite part of the movie.
Ah, yes. I think we may both be in agreement on this.
Rivers fight scenes.
Yeah. That's worth the price of admission alone.
In my opinion, two of the greatest, if not the two greatest, fight scenes ever filmed. Summer Glau, who played River, trained as a ballerina from the time she was 3. She actually received a scholarship.
Just imagine an interpretive dance ballet with 2 blades.
So she trained as a dancer from the time she was 3 to, I think, 16. And so she can do things physically that most people can't, which really lend themselves to great fight scenes.
I think of it now, but if only he had casted Jackie Chan as a Reaver.
Oh, God. Yeah.
To have had the two of them go up against each other.
Yeah.
Ah. Perfection.
But in the first fight scene in the bar, there's a great moment where some guy comes up behind her. She kicks him in the back of the head from behind. Brings her leg up behind and kicks him in the back of the head. I'm still trying to work out the physics. I'm part of me still thinks it was done with a fake leg.
I'm trying to remember the movie now where they had like the 2 legs up and then the other fake leg come. Yeah.
Another great part of that first fight scene is she beats up Jane.
Oh, yeah.
And I never liked Jane, so I loved that. In the second scene with the Reavers, towards the end of the movie, there was one moment that I thought looked a little too, you know, dance-like, when she throws the bag out.
There, it was all dancey, but that's what was so weird and beautiful about it, though.
Yes, but there was a moment where Simon needs, he's a ship's doctor, he needs his medical bag from this room that full of Reavers. She runs in, grabs the bag, throws it out the door, closes the door, and fights the Reavers. When she throws the bag out the door, it was a straight-up contemporary move. It looked like something from a dance routine that, you know, I've seen before.
Oh, I think I've seen all of those moves in a dance routine before, but it was just fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I will say the fight between Mal and the operative after that were actually going on simultaneously.
Yeah.
Almost as good.
Eh.
It was very, almost They Live, where in terms of the pacing, where they're just slowly beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Until one just gives up or one gets the upper hand. And that I just liked for the duration and brutality of it. It wasn't as obviously as pretty as River scenes or as creative, but it was just fun to just see them pound on each other for that long. Probably I liked it so much because it reminded me of They Live.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that until you brought it up, but yeah. They just needed some glasses. And really, that is what he was doing. He was fighting to put the glasses on him.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Hadn't thought of that. Now, another thing, and again, I don't think it's a flaw, but I think it was a missed opportunity. Well, not even opportunity. I just wish they would have done more with Mr. Universe.
Oh.
He's basically the hacker of the Firefly universe.
Right, we hadn't really mentioned him. I should have brought him up in the plot, but yes, Mr. Universe, the kid from Numbers.
Thought he looked familiar. He's basically the one who decodes the commercial that River was watching when she said Miranda. And basically, when they find out the big piece of information that's going to take down the Alliance, they have to get back to him to broadcast it out.
And his place looked like Reverend Jim's did after he won the lottery.
Mm-hmm. And he's just a very interesting character that I wish Joss had thought of sooner and used in the series.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't make it through the movie, but he kind of has to die in the movie. You know, so I can't say I regret him dying.
It's pretty obvious that he's going to go, yeah.
And there's also some great foreshadowing. Now, this was the first time you've seen the movie, so you might not have caught it. But there's a scene where the teacher, they flash back to the classroom again. The teacher asks all of the students to lie down, and River says she won't. And there's a couple of other scenes that hint toward Miranda.
Yeah.
I think you kind of need to see it at least once to know what to look for in those scenes. But just that, particularly that lie down scene I loved, you know, knowing what was coming. Also, in that last fight scene, there's a moment where this platoon of Alliance troops come through a wall just after River takes out the Reavers.
Right.
And I love the look on her face, because you know she's willing to have a go at them. She is completely ready to just turn on them and hack them to bits. And the operative calls them off. But I kind of wish she would have. I would love to see how that would turn out.
I could have watched just an hour of her running through crowds of people, just, you know, mowing them down, you know. A samurai movie with her would be something else. Yes.
And I will say, I've seen Summer Glau in other roles. She hasn't been quite as good as she's been in this role. I think this is her best work. Not just the fight scenes, but her performance as River was brilliant throughout the series.
And it's a character that really, it's an important character in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's in the wrong hands, well, it's Marina Sirtis.
Yeah, it's really easy to overdo. She's insane, basically.
Right.
Her brain has been messed with. She's insane. Real easy to overdo. Summer gives her just the right touches.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's some points where you kind of feel she's kind of overdoing it a bit, but it's not constant enough where it's Marina Sirtis. I look forward to your letters.
Oh, just a little bit of trivia in reference to the first scene, since we're talking about the fight scenes.
Okay.
To put River to sleep, Simon says, Etu Kurem Nasmech. It is actually Russian for, this is very ridiculous, or literally, this is for hens to laugh.
Oh, I thought it was going to be something like from the Necronomicon.
No, it's literally, it's this is ridiculous. Also, in the DVD commentary, Joss points out that, of course, Summer does her own stunts. Summer Glau, as well as Chiwetel Ejiofor, the operative, Nathan Fillion, and Sean Marr, Simon. They all do their own stunts.
Now, what did you think about the operative's method, his preferred method to inflict an honorable death on someone?
I loved it. Particularly when Mal gets out of it.
Well, yeah.
The method is he comes up behind the victim, pinches a nerve that paralyzes them, puts his sword in front of them, and has them fall on his sword. He tries it with Mal. Mal explains that due to some shrapnel, that nerve doesn't work anymore. And I'm glad we're doing another movie with Chiwetel Ejiofor, because he was in 2012.
Oh, that's right.
He is a brilliant actor, so I'm glad we're doing something good that he's in.
There's nobody that was good in that.
And I've seen him in a number of other things. He's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we're finally, giving him his due. Turns out that, again, random trivia, comic book artist Bertie Wrightson, co-creator of Swamp Thing, contributed concept drawings for the Reavers. One of the creators of Swamp Thing designed the Reavers.
And I always thought they were more of like a Mad Max.
They're very Mad Max, yeah.
Yeah.
A little more horrific.
Going
back to the series, I think it's in the first or the third episode, the first time they bring up the Reavers.
Yeah.
Zoe, Mal's second in command, says, when she's explaining the Reavers to Simon, says, if they get on board, they'll rape us to death, skin us, and sew our skin into their clothing. And if we're very lucky, they'll do it in that order. Which kind of really gives you a picture of who you're up against.
Yeah.
And especially when, well, the big reveal at the end has to do with them, and it's makes it that much more powerful when you understand how savage they are. Oh, by the way, the name Miranda comes from The Tempest.
Oh.
She says the line in Act 5, Scene 1, "Oh, brave new world that has such people in it."
Okay.
Of course, which lends itself to, the plot of the movie. Miranda being a world. Yeah, Miranda is a world, not a person. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah.
All right, so on to sequels and remakes.
On the sequels.
And yes, I actually have stuff for sequels and remakes. Fans had hoped that if Serenity had been successful, it might have either led to a revival of the TV series or a film franchise, colloquially referred to as the Big Damn Trilogy or BDT. The former was always unlikely, a series, since Fox still owns the name Firefly and all the TV rights. And Joss reportedly refused to work with them, although he later did Dollhouse on Fox, which didn't end well either. The fans' hopes for further theatrical films appear to have been partially dashed by Serenity's mediocre box office showing, and I will admit, I didn't see this in theaters. I'm part of the problem.
I didn't even know this was in theaters.
And I've been a brown coat since 2002. I loved this show in its original run, so I should have seen it in theater. Whedon has stated that if a sequel is made, he hopes to address Book's backstory and deal with Jubal Early, the bounty hunter from the series finale. Which is interesting, because I just watched that today, and he was spaced at the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
He was in a suit, so he survived. In fact, he has the last line, but
yeah,
his odds of survival weren't good.
Well, they talk about what his odds of survival are. It's a big number to, one. And, but then they show him and he says something like, what was something like, this is not how I.
Yeah. It's some kind of throwaway, funny line.
Not how I planned it or something like that. But yeah, indicating that he does survive.
Mm-hmm. Whedon also revealed that there's a strong possibility that everyone would return for the sequel, despite the deaths.
Of course. That's why it's dumb to kill anybody.
I think if they were to do it, and again, a series would be is almost out of the question.
How the hell can they bring Family Guy back and not this, though?
I think they would probably just ignore the movie in general, because there's nothing that happens that they really need to work on. If they bring all of the actors back, there's nothing that happens in the movie that they need to touch to continue in another movie.
Very true. Aside from those deaths, it could be a very standalone project.
Yeah. However, at the 2007 Comic-Con, Whedon stated that he believes hope for a sequel rests in the sales of the collector edition DVD. In August 2007, in an interview with Amazon.com, prior to the DVD's release, Whedon said, "It's still on my mind, but I don't know if mine is the only mind that it's on." In other words, it's probably not on anybody else's mind. Whether or not anybody who's involved would be available at that point, everybody's working, I'm happy to say, is a question, but whether I would want to do another one is not a question. On October 4th, 2007, Alan Tudyk suggested that Universal was considering another film due to the DVD sales, although Joss later said it was wishful thinking. Joss gets questions about a Firefly revival to this day. A while back, maybe a year or two ago, Nathan Fillion made a comment about wanting to buy the rights. People were willing to start up a collection to buy him the rights.
And why would Fox hold on to it if they're not going to do anything with it?
Because they still make money off of it. The DVDs still sell a lot.
Yeah.
There's other merchandise. I have two shirts, excluding the one that I'm wearing, the Blue Suncher, which I bought on Cafe Press. I have two movie shirts. I have one with the Serenity logo and one saying I aim to misbehave that were sold by Fox, basically. So they still have merchandising money. They still sell DVDs. I would love it if they would be willing to sell the rights back to Joss, because a Kickstarter would have that funded in 5 minutes. Browncoats would donate everything we have, and Joss would have the rights would have enough money for the rights within 5 minutes, because they've all said they're willing to do it again, to start a new series or to bring it back.
I think a series, another season, would be more preferable to a movie, honestly. I mean, I think the series is actually a lot better than the movie, really.
I don't know if I'd say a lot better. It is better. I like the movie almost as much.
I think the movie, the storytelling just wasn't quite the same. It was too condensed.
Mm. Well, yeah, because they had to explain everything. It had to work for people who'd never seen the series.
Well, this probably covered a lot of ground, you know, this movie. It's something that he would have taken who knows how many episodes to have done.
Right.
I saw somewhere that Miranda was going to be introduced at the end of the second season if it had gone on long enough.
Oh, wow. So it probably would have been the end of the third season when they finally got there.
Right. So think about this. This movie, what was it, hour and a half?
2 hours.
2 hours? Okay. Was probably about a season and a half's worth of material.
Yeah, true.
Crammed into 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but obviously I would prefer a series, because that's a long-term thing and I get to live in the universe longer.
And yeah, well, that's the point. He created this universe that we hardly knew you.
Yeah. And you know, people have speculated this, and I agree, that it's a lot easier to do 14 brilliant episodes than a brilliant series. You know, part of the reason it's so amazing is because it's so short.
Nah, I disagree. I think it could have gone, I mean, it was the first, I don't know how many chapters of a book. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, well, wait a minute, what the fuck happens next, man?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, you know, if they had gone 2 or 3 seasons or more,
oh,
it wouldn't have all been as good. It would have gotten hit or miss. Everything does.
True.
Another one of his shows, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that I'm also a big fan of, went 7 seasons. If I'm objective, only 3 were really good. So just doesn't have a great track record when it comes to prolonged runs. Firefly was brilliant for 14 episodes in a movie. Dollhouse was great for a season and change, because it didn't do a full second season, and the first few episodes were crap. Angel was great for maybe 2 of the 5 seasons. So, you know, his track record for prolonged runs isn't great. So, and that's part of my concern. Yes, I'd love to see it come back and go back to that universe with new material. But I think I also like that it's this beautiful little gem that was 14 episodes in a movie. And that's all.
So what? Any word about them actually? No, there's no timetable on set for this, right? For a sequel.
Well, there's no word of a sequel. There's no, that. The
Everybody's way, interested in, you know.
Well, Joss would go back to this universe in a heartbeat, as would most of them. Nathan Fillion has a series now, as does Alan Tudyk. They'd probably find a way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't think the sales were enough to push Universal to do a sequel.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And as I said, the series rights are held in, you know, Fox's iron grip.
Just for t-shirt and DVD sales.
Mm-hmm. So, shame. I don't have much hope that there is going to be more Firefly, unfortunately. Right. Even though, you know, they're all asked to this day if there's going to be. And of course, needless to say, no one else should touch this.
No, we won't get into any of that. We've gone long enough.
But I'm saying, I don't want any remakes. No one other than Joss Whedon should touch this universe.
Oh, you know what? There is one person I would love to see do something with this.
Okay.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Mm-hmm. On the brains. I loved this. Yes, it's not perfect. There are a few things I would have liked to have seen done differently, but I gotta go 5.
Compared to the show, I'm gonna, just for the shoehorning, I'm gonna take off. And some of the special effects were kind of meh.
They were meh in the show, though.
For a show, you can kind of see. Well, you know, I don't know. The show was kind of more forgivable because it was 01.
Maybe.
I'm just going 4.5, though.
Okay.
I'm not taking too much off.
All right.
Because, I mean, these fight scenes are yeah. some of the best you're going to see. They're just top-notch. And, you know, it's nicely acted, too, of course. So, 4.5. Definitely on the recommended list.
All right. So, what have we learned?
It's a good thing that Fox learned this shit before Fringe came in.
Actually, I think that is the only science fiction series they've done justice to.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh.
A final whole season would have been nice of that. But
we got better than they've done in the past.
Very true.
This, Space Above and Beyond. Anyway, before we get too sidetracked, I learned the definition of interesting. All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing, as I said earlier, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. I think I said that earlier.
I don't think you said the movie that we were saying that we were going to do at the end of last episode.
It is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. That, once again, is going to be a love fest.
It is. Sorry, guys.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the Podtrack survey. Please, we'd really appreciate it if you'd fill out the survey. It's short. It would help us get some demographic information.
Yeah, you guys should start a campaign to bring back Zombie Takeout after its end.
Yes. Hell may freeze over again. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
Maybe.
You'll also find the movie list, which has been put back to its correct length.
That's such a beautiful touch.
Every movie we've reviewed so far, every movie we're planning to review, some in order. There's no placeholder yet.
Yeah, we need to find a new big bus.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the request form, if there's a movie you'd like to hear us review, put it on the request form. We'll get to it at some point. And the recommendations list, this is obviously there. There was never any question. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern going to be there, no question. You could also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 401-4368-ZTL1, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861.
They can still go fuck themselves, really, the alphanumerically challenged.
Of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
are.
There
you are.
We can never stop the signal.
I'm Scotto.
And before we get into this week's movie, I just want to say right off the top, this is going to have some spoilers. So there are a couple of key points in the story that we really can't avoid talking about. So if you haven't seen the series and the movie, forget all of that. I'll get into it after I say the name. I forgot I was going to do it then. I'll just do that whole thing again after I actually say what the movie is.
Oh boy.